Hi, I'm Ron Randall, and you're listening to the Phantom Squad podcast.
Hey, everyone. This is going to be another episode of the Phantom Squad podcast. My awesome guest this week is Ron Randall. How's it going?
Good. Very good. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. As soon as I seen your Kickstarter and your artwork, I was just amazed and wanted to come have you on to talk about it and let people know so they can, you know, help you fund it to get that out there. Because I know I'm working on a show myself getting, you know, backing. So I know how hard that can be. So I'm glad to help promote it.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much. It's really true. What I like to talk to my, you know, to the people that read my book about is how much I enjoy telling the stories and making the comics, because that's what I'm here to do. But a huge part of that when you're using crowdfunding and that sort of stuff is exactly what you're saying. It's getting the word out, finding the eyeballs. I mean, I know there are people there. I do discover them with every campaign, but it feels like it's the tip of the iceberg. I mean, a lot more people that could find out about my project or your podcast would enjoy it. But how do you get that? How do you get in front of those people? That's a real challenge for us, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So that's why I said I see people like you and I'm like, okay, let me reach out because I know how hard it is to get this. I'm definitely. I'm working with an animation company now. And that was our goal to, you know, do a fundraiser to raise the money for animation because it is so expensive.
Yeah. I'm sure animation is amazingly expensive, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was explaining to somebody the other day, like, oh, how much is it? And I was like, for a 22-minute pilot just to get seen is 20 grand. And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, you're looking at $30 a second.
Yeah.
Which is that's crazy.
It is, yeah.
And you wouldn't think it'd be that much, but I'm like, I guess it is, you know, people hand-drawing especially, like,
yeah,
it takes
there's
time.
There's a lot of people involved with it. There's a lot of technology involved with it. That's one of the things that appealed to me. So in case your viewers don't know who I am, should I introduce myself a little bit?
Yeah. As I said, tell us who you are, you know, like introduce like what you do. Because I've looked at your IMDb and I know you had some film credits and some comic credits, you know, kind of give us a feel of like what you do. Because I know a lot of people might see your work, but just don't know who you are yourself.
Yeah, well, I've been drawing comics professionally for a long time, since the early 1980s. I started out working at DC and Marvel. And after a few years there, I was approached by Dark Horse Comics when they were first starting out. They invited me to come and work for them and gave me sort of a creative blank check, which is how they got to lure me away from working for DC Comics at the time. And that's how I came to create my dream project, which is Trekker, science fiction series about a young woman who starts as a bounty hunter. But sort of that's just the beginning of the long journey of self-discovery and destiny that she's on. So that's a little bit of a capsule of all that stuff, I guess.
Awesome. So how did you come up with the name? Because I know as soon as I saw it, I kind of had because I'm a big Trekkie. I saw a sure. Star Trek connection sort of in the font, kind of the name. Was there an inspiration there? Or was it kind of just another take on that word that's been used for that franchise for so long?
Yeah, it's just another take on that word, really. When you climb into the time machine and go way back in time to about 1985, which is when Dark Horse first approached me and said, if you come and work for us, we'll pay you. Basically, they said, and you can do whatever you want, which is something that a creative person never hears. So I had to sit down and figure out what would my dream project be. And I've always loved science fiction. I've loved everything from, you know, old classic Flash Gordon stuff, and I read the Dune books when I was younger, and when Star Wars came out, I was thrilled with that, and Blade Runner. So I wanted a science fiction book, and you couldn't do many of those in comics back then. I thought if I had a character who was a bounty hunter, that connoted a certain amount of old Western, which always appealed to me too, those classic old Western stories, and it meant that she could take all sorts of journeys, and each journey could take us to new situations and settings and expand her world and stuff. That all appealed to me. So I wanted a title for the series that would sort of connote that sense of journey, adventure, travel. And Trekker just sort of suggested itself to me. It's a cool sounding word. It's got hard consonant sound like those K's and the active ER at the end. So it seems like it's a dramatic sounding word to me. And of course, you know, I wasn't living under a rock. I knew that Star Trek existed, but in 1985, Star Trek was more or less a dormant property. The original series had been off the air for like 20 years. They may have, at that point, I think the first motion picture had come out and been in theaters, but comics and motion pictures weren't strongly connected back then anyway. So I just thought, well, it's just a word, trekking, trekker, treks. So it's available, and and really, there's dark, Star Trek was kind of like sleeping or whatever. So, and timing was pretty bad in that case, because as soon as I started doing Trek or Dark Horse, Paramount Studios announced Star Trek: The Next Generation was coming out, and I said, well, I'm kind of screwed, because I was committed to my thing, and that was going to be, so I knew that there was a chance of confusion, and that there would be possibly some of that, gray area stuff there. And but it was just, I was committed to the title and the series. Had I been a cannier business person, I might have said, well, if I immediately retitled my book, there'd be less chance of that overlap or confusion. But I just wasn't, I was stubborn enough to just want to stick with my my own title. So that's how it happened. It's unfortunate. They're both science fiction. They have very little in common other than that. I mean, I love Star Trek. How could you not when you were a kid, and those shows came on the air? But Trekker is a whole different world than that.
Oh yeah, and I guess for me, I guess it was a different thing when I saw that. I kind of connected the Trek thing, and I was like, well, for me, it was more, it brung me in. I was like, oh, let me see if this is something else. Then I started getting into it, and I was like, oh yeah, this is something different than what I initially thought from the namesake. So it kind of had the opposite effect that you thought it would be. At least in my case, it had a it drawed me in because I was already a fan of the something with that name.
Yeah, I guess it can cut either way. It's a double-edged sword, as they say. People say, "Oh, Trekker," and if they're saying, "Oh, I really like Star Trek," and they pick it up, they could do one of two things. They could do what you did, and hopefully the stories and the material I'm doing, the content, is good enough to do that. People will say, "Oh, I thought it was this thing, but it's not what I thought, but it's pretty cool in its own right." But some people, if they're expecting Star Trek, and it's not Star Trek, they're just not gonna give it the time of day. But I just, I can't control that. I can only really control what I do in my series, and hope that, and thankfully, I'm glad to hear that worked for you. Hopefully the stories will have enough merit that people will judge it on its own terms.
Yes. And now one thing I wanted to ask you too, creating your own characters and stuff that I'm learning now, what is your process or how do you go about, starting with a name and an idea to, what they're going to look like, what's that, from details of what the hair is going to look like, what they're, where the freckles on their face, what weapons are they going to use, what is your process? I know everyone's process of character, design and creation, like what is your process of how you create your characters for each, iteration.
It's a really good question, and there, like you said, there isn't just one answer to it. Every creator seems to have their own approach, or at least their own variation on approaches. For me, it starts off largely, I guess you could say, instinctive or intuitive, but I just sort of try to tap into my own, whatever's banging around inside of myself. And what that is largely is everything that I've been exposed to, the comic books that I've read, the movies I've seen, the novels that I've read, images I've seen on TV or in magazines or whatever. All that stuff stays somewhere rolling around in an artist's, mind, either on a conscious level or on an unconscious level. And when I came to Trekker, once I had pretty much the basic premise I sketched out to you, I wanted a female character who was going to be, a bounty hunter. And I wanted to make one who was sort of dressed appropriately for that sort of job, not somebody who was dressed like, a chorus girl or some of the typical female character costumes that were around in comic books back in the mid-1980s. That's
Yes, a
probably
lot
all
of
right.
Princess Leia, slave girl.
Well, yeah, that sort of stuff, right? So I wanted somebody who was built for a job. I mean, who was dressed for a job where she was going to be out, tracking down desperate murderers and criminals, and I wanted a character that had some gear on her, some protective padding, some straps and belts and things like that. I didn't want to go overboard with it, because I was going to have to be drawing it a lot, but I wanted to design them as strong and distinctive. So, with those sort of little parameters there, I just sort of started pushing my pencil around on the paper, roughing in a basic figure. And I knew I wanted a character who was going to come across as being very tough, because she would have to be. But for the story to have any emotional depth and interest to it, there had to be a lot going on underneath the surface of this character. And so all that stuff is in my mind, even when I'm just starting to doodle a figure, because the body language that you use, the pose you put a character in, that can convey a lot. So I just did, and very quickly this character came together. I knew I wanted to have short hair because that just seemed, it was practical. She wasn't going to be having long flowing locks when she's out, fighting mass murderers, right? So it just didn't make any sense to me. It just seemed more practical, and sort of distinctive. So I came up with a distinctive, I thought, sort of swoop look shape to her hair, because that's a good thing to have in comics. If you're just drawing your character's face in a panel, you want that character to be instantly identifiable to the reader. It shouldn't just like, oh, there's a generic handsome man, there's a generic tough looking woman, whatever it is, there's something very specific about her. And in Mercy's case, Mercy St. Clair, the hair is distinctive enough to hopefully tag her, as we say in the business. And then it was a matter of just coming up with a combination of belts and pads and a couple of weapons that she'd have that sort of felt real within the kind of the science fiction slash western slash crime noir sort of stew that I was trying to build the story out of. So again, I sort of start with an instinctive look, just working from that. And then at some point, then the analytical part, kicks in. You say, well, if this is over here, then to balance that, I want another element over there, or it's getting too complicated here. But I try to trust my instincts first to come up with an idea, and then pull back and take a look at it and refine as necessary. With Trekker, actually, the first thing that came out was pretty darn close to what I ended up with for her initial costume design.
Awesome. Yeah, I was wondering that too, because I could definitely see, it kind of gave me that feel just seeing that character. The look was a mix of, space cowboy, kind of Clint Eastwood mixed with that 60s sort of kind of spy movie, kind of a bunch of gadgets, but mixed with that simpleness of the bounty hunter Western, right, that you're looking at.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about Clint Eastwood, but another thing, because she does have that little cowl thing that she wears around her neck, and that's almost like, yes, the poncho that I hadn't even thought about that. Another one that I thought of was about a year before I created Trekker, I was drawing a backup story in DC's Sergeant Rock comic book, which is the war comic book, and they would often have these short little stories in the back, and I got to write and draw one of those. And I'd become interested in Japanese culture and samurais and that sort of stuff. So I did a story about samurais. And to do that, I did a lot of research into samurai armor, how it was made and the patterns that they would wear it in and stuff like that. And so then when it came to doing Trekker, and like I said, I knew I wanted to have a character that had some sort of padding on and stuff. I think a little bit of that samurai design sense seeped into the sort of pads that I would have on her, because I was thinking of being similar, not hard metal, but the samurai arm was basically, yarn woven with like in a bunch of little metal rings, so it was flexible and sort of breathable. Anyway, now it wasn't consciously in my mind, like I said, as I was pushing my pencil around designing Trekker. I just think those things sort of seeped down into my pencil from my brain. And who knows? I mean, I saw those Clint Eastwood movies and loved them as a kid. Maybe on some unconscious level, that was slipping down into my pencil too. It's kind of a mysterious process. And sometimes I don't like to poke around inside my brain too much to figure out where it's coming from. Just if it's working, leave it alone,
Oh yeah. I've run into that too myself with creating the animated series that I'm working on. I love John Hughes movies growing up, even though that's not my genre. I had older siblings who introduced me to those movies. So I wanted to make sort of a ragtag group of different people, but I'm like, okay, it can't be too cliche, but I love the dynamic. So one of the things that went into a scene, I was like, I have to do this in a way where it's John Hughes but not too much John Hughes, was the montage scene in the mall. So I'm like, okay, I need that, because one character gets changed from his nerdiness to more his individuality, And I was like, I need to do that in a way where it's a new take on this old cliche that's been done a million times. So
Well,
taking
that's—I
those
mean,
inspirations and making something new out of it, you know, like taking a piece of clay that anybody can get and just making something new.
yeah, and that's—I mean, that's to me. I think it's exactly what you're saying. Is that I think that when people say they've done, you know, I think when you do something that's new or innovative or imaginative, mostly what that is you're taking, at least putting it for myself, the most fresh ideas that I do are basically just taking various elements from different things and maybe combining them in a slightly different way, you know, getting the proportions of, you know, Western and you know, science fiction, space opera. If I put those elements together in a slightly different way than they've been done before and introduce a few other elements about character and that sort of stuff. And it's like everybody that puts the soup together makes it a little bit differently. So it's different. It's similar, but the flavors are different. And sometimes those subtle differences can make a big difference and feel fresh and new. So I think that's what imagination is. It's really just combining things. I don't think you make up anything out of thin air. I think we're combining things out of our memories and impressions and passions.
Oh yeah, I think there is a concept that I've heard recently that like, while you have these things that you see like these inventions on TV, you're like, wait a minute, I had that idea like 3 years ago, that there's all this, we all have this same simple, you know, this all connecting concept that we all have this certain same ideas, but some of us beat others to the concept beforehand. Or, you know, that cosmic soup coming together, like you were saying, you know, same with that. And, you know, taking like, or for me, it's like taking ideas or themes for, you know, issues or episodes and going, hey, there's a scenario with this type of character art that I didn't get to see that this creator didn't do. I'm going to take that and I'm going to do my spin on that, because that's, if I want to see that, I know somebody else would want to see that adventure too.
Yeah, you know, and that's, I think that's a real key thing. I saw a conversation written out with another creator just a few days ago. And they were asked a question like, basically, if there's one piece of advice you'd give to somebody who's just getting started and on the creative journey right now, what would it be? And it's basically, you know, be true to yourself and do what you love. And that is a super simple formula, and it's really, really difficult to execute, to stick with it, because the financial pressures, the pressures to conform or do something that is overtly more commercial or whatever are tremendous. I really think that what you were just saying is so key, that you've got to find things that you love to do and stick to those. In the long run, I think that's going to work out better for you. You may not, you know, you may miss the gravy train as making, you know, a boat ton of money by not being where the culture seems to want you to be or what is most rewarding to you to be right now. But in the long run, I think you'll probably have a more satisfying career. I speaking for myself, that's true with me. The artists and the stories and comics that I fell in love with when I was a kid, those styles and approaches weren't at the center of the comics industry when I was getting started. So I that may be one of the reasons that I wasn't, you know, I never became like a big superstar in comics, but I always had a great passion for the sort of stuff that I like to do, could do solid work in that vein. And in the end, I got to create, as I say, my dream project, Trekker, which I'm still doing to this day and feeling more sort of creatively fulfilled and more excited to be doing it than ever before. So for me, anyway, it's paid off in the long run to sort of, you know, find what I love to do and kind of stick to it.
Yeah, and I get that from that same thing. Like, it's that, you know, that feeling of this might not be for everybody, but this is a story that I feel that I, you know, needs to be out there, because it's not portrayed. It might not be the most, you know, like you said, gravy train. It's like the story I'm creating, without going into too much detail. It's without giving it away to people, but it's, you know, it's the concept of like, I feel this is what needs to be out there. Even if it's not mainstream, I know there's other people out me who need to hear this message. and see this, and I want to get that work out because I know it's going to affect people. Not, it might not be commercially successful, but it's a passion, it's my love, and I want to get this out here. Same with yours, you know, you've been doing something that you love. It might not be what, you know, like Marvel or DC, those guys, you know, what they're wanting at the time for the quote unquote what's popular, but it's a story that you feel needs to be out there. And I'm glad that, you know, there's people like you who are taking that step and, you know, putting those stories out there that may not be in the quote on mainstream. And that's amazing.
Well, thanks. And yeah, that's, you know, your point about you feel, if you think the idea for your movie, if you like it, then you can't be the only one. And that is, literally, that's one thing I wanted to say. That's almost exactly the sentence that was going through my head when I was creating Trek, because again, back in the 1980s, there weren't many science fiction comic books around there, and that's what I wanted to do. There weren't many comics that had a strong female lead character in an action adventure role. But that's what I wanted to do. I'd had a little experience working on a backup story at DC called The Barren Earth, which is a science fiction series written by a really good writer named Gary Cohn. And it was like an Edgar Rice Burroughs sort of sci-fi world, but there was a strong female lead character in it. And I just found that a cool, fascinating, different approach to comics. And so I wanted to do science fiction with a strong female lead character. As I said before, I wanted her to be so that I could believe in my character on some level, and maybe give the readers a chance to find her more believable. And none of those were commercial sounding ideas at the time, and I knew that. But I figured, well, Dark Horse, they're publishing it. Naive, I thought they'll figure out how to sell it. And like you, I was just thinking, I think this is kind of a cool idea. There feels like there's energy in this, and I can't be the only person on the planet that would like this story. The challenge, like we were sort of saying up front, is finding those eyeballs. You know, if people want a certain sort of a comic, like a giant sprawling action, or I mean superhero fantasy or whatever adventure, Trekker isn't that. So it's not going to work for those people necessarily. But there's got to be some people out there who are really going to like what I'm doing, as much as I do. And then and that is th that's the real, in some ways, the biggest challenge I'm dealing with right now. By now, I've done a lot of Trekker stories. I kind of know what I'm doing as far as telling Mercy's journey, writing it and drawing it. I've got a lot of experience at that, but I'm still fairly new, since I've gone to self-publishing Trekker, which I do on Kickstarter now. I'm fairly new at that, figuring out how to get the word out there, how to talk about it, and where to talk about it, and when to talk about it, in ways that can help to encourage people to help me spread the word and all that stuff. I'm having to learn how to be a businessman. You know, as I say often, I did not get into comics to sell comics. I got into comics to make them. But in order for me to have the Trekker stories come out the way I want them to, a few years ago, I decided I needed to take the step to start self-publishing them. And that means I have to wear a lot of hats that I didn't have to wear before, publishing and marketing and dealing with printers and all that sort of stuff. It's a lot of extra work besides just writing and drawing the stories, which is all I really want to do, is write and draw the stories. But I wear these other hats because it's just important to me to see this series through. So that's where I'm at.
Oh yeah, and I can totally relate on that too. You know, doing the podcast, like I out of the podcast, I actually started, you know, my own production company because I was doing so much to, you know, marketing, you know, doing gra learning graphics to do my graphic design, you know, doing all these things. And I already had this idea that because I wanted to be, you know, I wanted my main goal was, you know, since I've been a kid, is voiceover and, you know, being in the animation industry. Because I just love the behind the scenes and just being, you know, I've done voices my whole life. And so I figured out, you know, through the podcast, you know, connecting with people and, you know, going, hey, how do I do this? Or where do you go here? You know, wearing those multiple hats of, you know, producer, video editor, audio engineer, you know, voicing, you know, learning how to do all these things. And you, I first initially, I fell in love with, I wanted to be the actor part of, you know, the thing, but after doing all this stuff, I learned, you know, like yourself becoming your self-publishing. I was like, wait a minute, I fell in love with behind the scenes producing, making this stuff. I fell in love with the behind the scenes. So now I want to take that and help other people with the production company to make and produce the things and also produce things for myself. But it was one of those, I was out of a passion of one thing led to, you know, finding the love of something that I want to do now, which is my production company. So I totally get the full hats thing. But yeah, so with, you know, with the empowering of, you know, that female lead character, has anybody like reached out to you or, you know, gave you any, like, you know, any female artists or people into comics or stuff like that, kind of like saying how your character inspired them to, you know, to create female lead characters in their comics?
I guess I'd say not directly, but maybe that's not true. Gail Simone, who's a pretty, she's a pretty prominent female comics writer and has been for a lot of years now. She's written Batgirl and Catwoman and Birds of Prey and did I say Wonder Woman? She has written a lot of great iconic characters and done sort of groundbreaking work with them. And it turns out that Gail read my book Trekker back when I'd first started at Dark Horse many years ago. And I don't know if I can take a claim that I inspired Gail Simone, but she does point Trekker as being one of the point to Trekker as being a rare example of a book that featured a strong female lead character that made an impact on her, I guess. And then her career just has sort of speaks for itself. And if Trekker was any little part of helping giving Gail a nudge in the right direction, I'll take that as a huge compliment. Another thing that meant just as much to me in a way though, was I had not been doing Trekker very long at Dark Horse, and I was at a convention, and this is a long time ago when you know, the in America anyway, the comic industry is mostly dudes, right? And this one guy came up to me at a convention, and he said, "I want to thank you for creating Trekker. It's the only comic book that I can get my girlfriend to read." And I took that as a tremendous compliment, because from the beginning, I wanted to create, and I knew I was a straight white guy writing a female character. And so I could have been open, letting myself in for a lot of trouble and criticism at the time if I didn't do well enough at the character. At least that's why I felt about it. And my goal was to create a character that, I think I said before, that readers could feel was believable, would be a recognizably human, and someone they could feel a connection to, recognize some parts of themselves in, perhaps root for her, cringe when she does something stupid, or, you know, just makes a bad mistake or is clueless. I wanted her to feel as alive and real as possible. Those are the stories that pull me in, the ones where the character is central. The character is the character in their story. That's what pulls me in. And then the trappings around the story, whether it's a science fiction story or a superhero story or a detective story, or a domestic drama. If the characters are vivid and real and believable to me, I will stick with them through their story. Even if sometimes the plot is maybe, you know, not as innovative as some people might want, or isn't as complicated or multi-leveled, or is too multi-leveled or too complicated. If I can say, okay, but I understand that my character is under threat now, I care about them, I want to see them get through this, I will stick with a lot of stories that way. So from the very beginning, despite the fact that the 12-year-old kid in me loves science fiction and spaceships crash landing on swamp planets full of lizard creatures or whatever, you know, the thing that is most compelling to me is, and the thing that endures and resonates the most is trying to have the character and the people that she interacts with real and believable. So, to the extent that I achieved any of that, I'm really grateful and relieved. And if that helped to spark some other creators to create more characters like that, that's great. I think there are a lot of factors that have been at play in the comic book culture in the last, I don't even know, 20 years or so, that have caused an influx of a lot of female lead characters and great stories to come out from both male and female creators. I don't know how big a role Trekker might have played in that, but it'd be great to think if I was even a little part of it.
Yes, and that story is an amazing story about, the only one that they can get their girlfriend. And so for you, what is, something for any anybody wanting to start, their own independent, comic book series like yourself or doing a Kickstarter, what's some advice you can give to them for, or that you've learned along the way to do that?
Well, so some of this, what I've already said to you up front, it sounds very glib. It's very easy to say, but I just think in the long run, find something that you feel passionate about doing, something that you believe in, something that you find rewarding to do just for the act of doing it. There's no guarantee that what you're going to do is going to find a really wide audience, but there's no reason it might not either, so I just find something you feel like doing. Make as sure as you can that it is indeed in some way different and unique. And honestly, if it's coming from inside of you, genuinely from inside of you, it can't help but be a little bit fresh and different, because each artist, each creator is different than the other, than anyone else. You may have a lot of the same influences, but they're going to combine in you a little bit differently than they would in somebody else. So that's what I that's a good starting place, I guess. Then just be aware that it's a tough road, and it's very complicated to try to be a creative person and a business person at the same time. So there's that. As far as Kickstarter specifically is concerned, look, I had some real advantages when I moved to Kickstarter. I had a character that was already well known to at least some people, and Trekker was a very beloved character and series, as I found out, to a certain number of comics readers. I had some name recognition myself, having worked for DC Comics and stuff like that. So I had a couple of things going for me. I didn't know how big my audience was or how big Trekker's following was when I launched my first Kickstarter, and it was scary. I was asking for $15,000 as my initial funding goal, and I thought this could be a dismal failure. Fortunately, it funded very quickly. It funded in like a day and a half and went on to, double its funding goals, stretch goals, all that good stuff. But when I first launched that campaign, I took the time to build my Kickstarter campaign as carefully as I could. I got a lot of advice from friends of mine who had done successful Kickstarters. Kickstarter is a very complicated thing if you're trying to figure it out, looking at it from the outside. So, do your homework. Whether you're trying to get work at DC and Marvel or in an animation company, or you're trying to do Kickstarters, the more time you spend educating yourself about the market you're trying to get into or the media you're trying to work in, the better off that will pay for you in the long run. So maybe that's enough advice. I don't know.
So, can you tell us the links where they can find your Kickstarter and, get, if they're able to, give you some money to fund your project and see it come to life?
Right. Well, I'd really appreciate it. I keep it as simple as possible. It's just the word Trekker. So Trekker and then the word Kickstarter. So TrekkerKickstarter.com. If you can type that in, it'll take you right to my campaign that's up and running now. I don't know when this is going to air exactly, but the campaign ends on March 16th. So just a couple of days from when we're recording this. So, but they can fund it that way. If they're watching this after my campaign has ended, I will make the link on that go to my Etsy store where they can find Trekker books that way as well.
All right, everyone, that's going to be another episode of the Phantom Squad podcast, which is like our outro. We always say, enjoy the madness.
Enjoy the madness.